Hello, my fans, friends. Welcome to the Rich Herring podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Thanks to everyone who's come to see the Can I Have My Ball Back tour so far. It's been going really well. I've got a 4-star review in The Standard, 4-star review in The Telegraph, who once called me the worst comedy experience of the year, so that's a turnaround. People have been coming, people have really been enjoying it, and it's getting better and better. The only gigs this week are both in Pocklington, the town I was born in, near York. There's a couple of tickets left for the evening show and a few more tickets left for the matinee, I think about 4:30. But love to see you there, Yorkshire. Pop along. Check richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs to see if I'm coming near to you. There are tickets left for nearly every show in the tour. I think Norwich has sold out. And a couple of gigs in London could do with your support as well. Anyway, please listen to the podcast. Do spread the news about the podcast to your friends. Listen as much as you can. Numbers are slightly down, which may affect the future of this podcast. So just leave it playing, even if you're not in the room. Love you. Now sit back, relax, and enjoy whatever it is you're going to listen to.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's deliberately teaching his kids the wrong things. Here's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, Leicester Square. Yeah. Thanks for coming. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. Though I was talking to Stretch Armstrong. The other guy is so fucking hard to come up with these. That is the laziest one I've ever done. Remember Stretch Armstrong?
Yeah.
Wait till next week's show. He calls it Rastafari. Very good. Yeah, I'm delighted. It's kind of fun when you have kids, and I've got two kids, I don't know if I've mentioned it before, and to teach them wrong things. And I think my daughter started calling maple syrup April syrup. So we all started calling it April syrup, and now they call it April syrup, and they don't know. We had some pancakes at the weekend, and my son said, pass me the April syrup. And at some point, they're going to find out that that's not what it's called, but it won't be from me. It's called April syrup at our house. For good. And then they'll be, why? Why? Anyway, look, all great news for me. My book, Would You Rather, is... out this, the week of recording, it'll be out on Thursday, I think. So if you're listening at home, it's available in book, ebook, and audiobook. It means finally I don't have to look at my iPad when I'm asking questions from it. That's what I'm very excited about. And to crack onto that. Nothing's happened to me this week because I've been working. So I'm going to just give you some information. Wait till next week's show. I tell you, it's going to be. I hope something happens between now and next week's show. There's a new on Twitter, which is working at the moment, ladies and gentlemen. That's topical humour for people in the future. If Facebook still isn't working when this podcast comes out, oh dear. That's good. That'll be bad. There's a new emergency question bot. It's called @emergencyqbot. And you can just say hello to it and it will ask you an emergency question randomly from the book. So... do enjoy that if you can. Thanks to Rob Manuel for sorting that out. And I think I forgot to say this. Like, we went to see Matilda a couple of weekends ago. A fantastic musical by former guest Tim Minchin, who's been on a couple of times. It's a brilliant musical. My kids love it. We've been singing the songs, playing the soundtrack. My daughter loves the bit where the bloke goes, "I can't find his frankenbeans." That's the... So she's developed a childish sense of humour. I don't know where she got it from. But when we're at Matilda, my son can't really sit down and concentrate. He's 4 years old tomorrow. He wasn't really paying much attention. It was hard to control him. But there's a beautiful song called When I Grow Up. I don't know if you know this musical. It's really, it makes me cry every time I hear it. It's beautiful. It's kids sing, "When I Grow Up, I'm going to eat sweets every day on the way to work and stuff." It's quite sweet. And so the kids sing it, and then the teacher gets on the swing and she starts singing it as well. And it's sort of it's a beautiful thing that a grown-up still feels like they haven't grown up. It's quite a beautiful, moving message. And she said, "When I grow up." And my son shouted out, "You're already grown up!" It's good. He got a good laugh. He's made a big audience of people. More people in that audience than there have been in my audiences. So. He's made them laugh. Anyway, do buy my Would You Rise. I'd say it's the perfect Christmas gift. It's for anyone aged 6 to 106, it says on the front, but no one outside of those parameters, please. So do not give it to a 5-year-old and do not give it to a 107-year-old. You can give it to a 106-year-old, but the minute the 107, slap it out of their hands. Right, let's crack on. We've got a fantastic guest this week. She is probably best known for her appearance on the Canadian TV show Electric Circus. That's why we are here to see it. Will you please welcome the amazing Catherine Ryan, ladies and gentlemen. Catherine Ryan, welcome back.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on one of my favorite podcasts.
Hooray. Well, you're doing a fantastic podcast of your own, unbelievable, on your own.
Is it unbelievable that I'm doing it on my own?
Well, as people may know, I do a couple of podcasts where I talk witter on to myself. And it's quite hard to do that if you haven't got some stones to talk about. So
I don't think it's hard if you're a narcissist. Maybe it just means we're bad.
Maybe.
You shouldn't talk to yourself for that long.
I know. It's tricky, but then once you overcome that feeling of this is a bit weird, I think, you know, it's very, it's a lovely, as the book is that we'll come to, The Audacity, it's, you know, there's a sort of self-help thing behind there in terms of you are this guru of living life to the full.
I am. And, you know, I think having a podcast where you speak all by yourself without guests is like being friends with muggles. Have you got any friends, like, now that I'm married, my husband has some friends that I'm like, "Oh, here we fucking go. Okay, let me steer this ship." And you just have to talk the whole dinner because they're such muggles.
Yeah. I don't really see anyone else outside of my family now, so it's fine. I won't talk about the people in my village. They're all lovely. So and they listen to the podcast and they're all great. So they're all. Electric Circus was that your first TV appearance?
It was, and such a wild crossover. We had a television channel in Canada that was called Much Music. This is before we had MTV, and there was a show where they would play popular music videos. You know how television just shows you music, and then they would cut to a studio where young dancers were just gyrating on podiums this high. I mean, I say podium, it would just be one of these. It was fully kitted out in IKEA. And we'd stand up there and just dance around. And then we knew across Canada that that was the show that young men would wank to, because they can't watch porn, but that's pretty close in the, like, turn of the century.
Yeah.
But such a weird coincidence. Do you know who also danced on Electric Circus in Canada?
I don't.
Marcus Brigstock.
Oh, God. I knew he'd done podium dancing. I didn't know it was on that.
Isn't that crazy?
Were a lot of people wanking to Marcus Brigstock? It's a tricky wank. That is all I'm saying, Marcus Brigstock.
He's a beautiful Canadian woman.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, so that's what... Well, look, I found that information out in your book, which is called Audacity. It's quite, as you say, you know, audacity is seen as being quite a negative thing, but it's kind of weird because the word audacious seems like quite positive to me. In fact, it wasn't until you start discussing audacity, I sort of realized they were the same word.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's used, I think, to shrink women specifically, like lots of language and culture. Be like, oh, the audacity of that girl. And I was just a very audacious child. It just means to be confident and self-assured to a level that some people find rude. But I don't feel like it is rude because I'm kind and thoughtful and generous, but I'm also audacious and it can be a good thing. And I think a lot of people, I didn't realize how much audacity people could use in their lives, but they can use a lot.
Well, I think especially here in the United Kingdom, we're very, very bad at being confident, very bad about, you know, what we would say would be showing off. I think having an opinion is almost, you know, before the social media came along, at least, is almost an offensive thing for anyone in the United Kingdom.
It is, but you're very Canadian as well. We apologize, and we want people to like us, and we want to be understood, and we want to be fair. And I think you can, those are all good things, but you don't have to compromise yourself in doing that.
No. But it's sort of written slightly like a self-help book in terms of how to do, each chapter's how to do this, how to do that. But it's taking us really through your life and the things that you've done. But it does feel, I was saying to you backstage, there's a chapter where you talk it's very, very honest, okay, to the extent that there's a chapter about your family and a member of your family. And I was listening to the audiobook, I was thinking, wow, this is going into a lot of personal detail about quite a specific thing and a family thing, and I was thinking, is this a step too far? But then actually it's a very important point you're making, I think, and I presume this is why you wanted to share it, in terms of how you know, if there's someone in your life who's toxic or someone in your life who's not being pleasant to you, you are able to cut them out of your life, which you've done to this family member.
Right. I talk about a problematic auntie who, I think there's alcoholism woven through my family. And the reason I wrote that chapter, I mean, for other people dealing with a similar situation where there's a difference between walking away lovingly and giving up. And it doesn't have to be a nasty thing. And I'm very nice about that auntie in that chapter.
You
I
are.
Say lovely things about her. So I don't think it's mean at all. It's just like, oh, this doesn't work for me. I don't have the tools to deal with this. I have to walk away. I wrote it also for my sisters and my mother because I feel like they continue to normalize behavior that is really hurting them.
Yeah.
And they can walk away like I did, and with love and light and generosity, and go, I hope it all works out for you, but I don't want to be yelled at Christmas again.
Yeah. I think that's something that's... Yeah. So that's a very difficult lesson to learn. And I think what I like about the book and what I like about you, I suppose, because it's very...
Don't laugh. Do you like me or not?
What I like about you is... Well, is that, you know, you're very honest about your own mistakes as well. And even... throughout this time, you've always been seemed to be wise. You know, your comedies always seem to have a wisdom to it. And I loved your, you know, I saw one of your first Edinburgh shows, if not your first Edinburgh show.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was great straight away. But you would also make ridiculous life decisions that confounded people you knew. And and you know, but because you talk about that honestly, and because you're honest about your own mistakes, I think it's that growing, isn't it? And I think that's what I kind of got from that chapter was, you know, that I've a similar situation. You kind of think, you just make a decision to go, okay, this isn't my problem anymore. And, you know, it's okay to walk away from something and go and say, that's the end of it.
Right. And I think people get caught up in either investment. People will stay in a bad relationship because they'll go, but I've invested 2 years. And that's the same that sitting at an unnamed local casino and putting lots of quarters in and never getting up because you go, but I've put all these quarters in, but the house always wins. So you got to get up and walk away and not worry that the next person to sit down is going to have this jackpot. There is no jackpot. It's a losing game. And I stayed in a lot of relationships. I'm just unpacking. I think when in your 30s, you start to understand more about your life. And I would love, I know that a lot of young women specifically listen to me for some reason. So I would love to remove the threat of them making some of those mistakes if I can.
But in a way, do you feel you have to go through those mistakes? Because it's...
No.
You know, I mean, some of them, the relationships, mistakes, you know, I look at that and I look at your life and I look at my life and my 30s and I made some bizarre choices about who I decided to...
Like what? Tell me some of them.
You know, but I went out with people who just weren't that nice to me and, you know, and it was sort of exciting. It's the same thing. I think your examples are worse than mine. I didn't ever, you know.
Go on. What's your example?
I didn't ever feel in danger, which I think you, I don't know if you say you feel in danger, but you should have felt in danger. And you know, but I certainly had one or two girlfriends where they were, you know, we were both crazy. And I think as you get older, you also realize, oh, they were crazy. And you go, oh, no, I was also absolutely crazy. And that's why we were together, because we sort of enjoyed the drama and the madness of what we were creating. But I think it's sort of that realization as you get through, you sort of have to do it to get through it. Those relationships I had that were bad, I kind of, the worst one sort of made me realize what I had to do next, you know.
Yeah.
Which I suppose is just about the case for you as
but
well.
Wouldn't it be nice if your kids and my kids would just listen to us and skip that whole, you know, tricky time?
Yeah.
Because I just think, no, I didn't need to make those mistakes. I should have just listened. But I wouldn't listen to my mother, who is very wise, who has a half-hour bonus track on the audiobook for some reason.
It's astonishing.
But yeah, like, did you listen to her?
Yeah, I did. I listened to
her. She's nuts. Well, she's but in a good way.
She's nuts, but great. But also what I love about it is a woman like that would never really get the opportunity to do a half-hour little book of her life.
Yeah.
And you've given her that opportunity. And she's very eloquent, and
she's
there's
great.
Lots of wisdom in there. And it's funny, and it's great when she's swearing.
Yeah. She says things like, and the way that I do an impression of my mother is spot on. I love it. Her voice, she's like, do you know? She'll give these little wisdom. She'll be like, I have a spreadsheet of risk assessment for my daughter's boyfriends. And then she'll say, being a good guy, no points. Going to work and doing your job, no points. And then she'll say at the end, what was it? Oh, I deserve a lot more credit for not telling people to fuck off. Just so funny. Yeah, I wanted her on it because she gave me this book growing up, but I didn't listen because she was my mom.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm kind of a bridge between like people and their moms. I'm like, I'm a problematic auntie. People should really cut me off, but they don't. And maybe they'll listen. And even, and this advice is not for just young people. It is also for my own mom. My mom puts up with a lot of stuff that she shouldn't. And she made a lot of sacrifices and made a lot of compromises and continues to do so. And I wish that she hadn't for her own like fulfillment. Yeah.
Well, but that's, I guess that's the interesting balance. And as you as a person as well, because it is this ballsy, I'll do what I want and I'll say what I want. But you are so helpful within the comedy community and you're so invested in the comedy community and you're giving a lot, especially to female comedians, I think, but that's...
I mean, not anymore. I haven't seen anyone in 2 years. I feel really bad. I don't even know if they're my friends anymore.
I'm sure they
are. Do you feel like that?
Well, you know, it's not much different to my life before and after. I live in the countryside.
Yeah.
I'm happy to stay at home. And so I didn't, until my wife told me 6 months into lockdown, there was a lockdown, I hadn't noticed it. It was a shame not to be able to come here, but I still managed to do my podcast despite it.
This is nice though, isn't it? Being out again.
Yeah.
And you don't even have masks on. How liberating. It's fun.
I suppose the thing you're saying there about telling people, if you could go back and tell Catherine Ryan a couple of the relationships you're in, you shouldn't be in this relationship. But especially, I think especially for women, that's even more true. And there's a chapter in your book about a friend of yours you work with who was killed by her partner as well.
Yeah.
So that's what's sort of surprising to me, that you witnessed that and had the horror of that. I mean, not witnessed it, but you were in, you know, you were there when it happened. You weren't there when it happened, but
when it unfolded.
Yeah, but still kind of made, you sort of still went for the bad boy, you know, for the, not even bad boys, just grotty, nasty.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like whatever you seek, you shall find. And I decided very early on through whatever experiences in my life that I thought men could be quite dangerous.
Yeah.
And, you know, topically, I think it's a tricky subject, but it's difficult for us because I don't know. I know that women aren't perfect, but there's this weird violence thing that we don't get the same way. You know what I mean?
Mm.
Like, not to be too dark on the podcast, but like 60 women were strangled by men this year while having sex. 0 men were strangled by women having sex. Like, it's just a thing that we are... Catlin Moran described it really beautifully. She said sometimes it's like living on a planet of bears. and you go, oh, these, they're nice bears, and these bears are adorable, and I like bears. I don't wish any harm to bears, but they're bears. So I decided that really early on, and then because anything that happens when you're very young writes on the canvas of who you are.
Yeah.
So this trauma of knowing the murderer who killed my friend, and my friend just innocently tried to break up with someone, and it ended her life quite violently, that I think I decided they were dangerous, and then I met ones that were diabolical at best. And it took me a long time to go, you don't have to find them and rescue them and fix that, and you don't have to do that. You don't have to win them over. And now I have a lovely husband, and the book isn't all, you know, doom and gloom.
No.
But it's a conversation. That whole violence thing is a conversation that is too delicate for me to have, you know.
I know, but yeah, it's sort of the realization of it, and then those choices. It is lovely that the way you met your husband, well, re-met your husband. Mm-hmm. So your husband was one of your childhood sweethearts, or your childhood sweetheart, and actually you met him through Who Do You Think You Are? You're going back to Canada to record that and meeting up with him through that, which is quite interesting, you know. And then you've had a baby together. I just find that quite interesting that Who Do You Think You Are has kind of created a new generation beyond. That's not ever happened, has it? Where it's got to stick a little thing on the line. It's got to put a little line saying, and because of this show, there is now another human being.
And you don't often want to have kids with someone you meet on an Ancestry program.
No, so it's, but that's it's a lovely story to reconnect in that way.
Yeah.
And it seemed to happen very fast, and it wasn't something, I mean, I think you'd said you'd talked on social media a little bit, or been aware of each other on social media a little bit, so there'd been a little bit of...
When you're from a small town, there's an awareness of the people you went to school with, but we didn't talk. We certainly didn't speak for 20 years.
No.
And I didn't want to be with anyone. I'd finally liberated myself from this cycle of dating the wrong people and holding on to them, because I thought the worse it got, I thought, well, if I fix it, then I'm not this failure and everyone will be really proud of me and I'll fix this. So then I finally abandoned all that. I was alone. I really wanted to be alone. And I was working too much anyway to ever meet anyone. So that was fine. That was great. And I went to Canada, flew there. I was with my sister all day filming, and then she said, let's go for drinks. And I was like, never, because I'm very professional and I had to film in the morning. But I went anyway, and then my high school boyfriend, not one of my childhood sweethearts, like my childhood sweetheart, before anything bad had ever happened to me, you know what I mean? Before I had learned any bad habits or been traumatized by anything, he was my boyfriend.
Yeah.
And he walked into the bar and he looked hot. And I just loved him. It wasn't just that he looked hot. I just loved him. I always loved him. And then I decided to bang him for a laugh. For a laugh. That's why everyone likes Canadian girls. What do you do for a laugh? Karaoke? I'll suck your dick at my mom's house. We just got on. We just had a chat. And then I thought it would be funny. And he thought it would be funny, I guess.
Yeah.
I guess. And then we were married like 6 or 7 months later, because I just couldn't be without him all of a sudden. I was like, oh no, I need to be in this relationship. Oh well, because then I had to rebrand in a pandemic.
Yeah.
As a married person.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that tour goes.
But that's, you know, it's nice within the context of the book as well to find this perfect relationship and to be happy and to find this guy who really sounds like a properly good guy.
You'd like him, he's really
nice. Yeah, no, he definitely does seem it. I mean, that sounds like he isn't it. He definitely seems it, but he's a man. So, you know, it's going to turn out badly.
We'll find out in a year.
Yeah.
Because he's so handsome that everyone who loved me suspected foul play.
Right.
And because of all my bad decisions, everyone was like, "Here, oh, what's this one got going on?" And so everyone, like my sister hired a private detective.
Right.
And my agent made me get a prenup. And so the prenup is like rock solid for 3 years.
Right.
And then starts to be holes in it.
Okay.
So if he still likes me in a year, then he likes me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know.
It's a beautiful story.
And do you think we should all go back to our first boyfriends and girlfriends and give that a try? Do you think that would work for everyone?
I think people have fantasies about that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
Uh-oh.
Well, it took me a long time to get over my first girlfriend, but I never, but we would... like I've thought, I've talked about this in a show in the Headmaster's Son, but I never had sex with her. I went out for 2 years, and you know, between 16 and 18, and she was a couple of years younger than me, so it was a very innocent relationship, really. Mm. But then it was because it was, my parents met when they were 14 and they're still together, so they've been together for 72 years or something.
What?
So I sort of assumed that would be the same for me. So it was a big thing when it went wrong, when it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But then also you sort of, I just wish I'd banged it, really.
Yeah.
And I think that would have sorted it all out.
What's her name once Instagram starts working?
If you're listening, Sian.
Oh, she was Welsh.
Well, her family were Welsh, yeah. Yeah, she was.
Nice.
Yeah.
I'm sure she's still around. Katie would be up for it. You know?
Think so? Yeah.
It's like a bucket list thing.
It's different. But then when you haven't seen someone for a long time, so that, don't you think that's like my memory of her is like I sort of last saw her when she's probably about 25. Mm. So like it'd be quite a shock now to see her and she's like 52 years old. I can't get my head. That would make me have to accept some things about myself.
Right.
That I'm 54. It'd be quite a shock to see her now, I think.
No, I liked it. I liked when I saw Bobby. He has like gray hair. And he had how men get like wizened and it looks sexy on them from like sun damage.
So I've heard.
Yeah, it's not fair. And then I mean, I don't even know if he knows it's me. I've had so much work done. No, but I liked him looking older. I liked him a lot. And that was cool to be like, oh, I don't fancy 16-year-olds. I fancy him as a 30. Yeah. How old was he? 5 when we met.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
And there's lots of fun. There's a very funny chapter about celebrities and the nature of celebrity and various celebrity encounters you've had. My favourite, which I think was you trying to pull Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
And failing.
Yeah. Well, why wouldn't you try? I've seen the film about him. I know he's a ladies man, Richard.
Yeah, I do know it.
I was single. You know I have a penchant for the problematic man. And I saw him at a party and I was chatting him up. Of course I was, because he's a genius. And he was chatting to me and he was really nice. He loves comedy. I'm sure he really loves you. He loves like smart comedy. And then all of a sudden he went a bit quiet and I was like, okay. And his assistant said, I'm very sorry, Professor Hawking's tablet has run out of battery, so he can't talk to you anymore. And I thought, oh, I know when I'm being blown off. And he's a genius. So if you had that ability, that's what you would say if you didn't want to talk to overzealous young women at parties. And then I needed to make sure I was being pied. So first I saw him speaking to someone else, and I was like, hang on. And then I searched, I went on this real deep dive of how the power wheelchair works, how it all works. There's a backup battery in the chair for the tablet. What do you mean, of course?
Of course, he doesn't fucking, his thing doesn't run out in the middle of a, oh, I forgot to charge my iPad. It's Stephen Hawking. It's the only way he can communicate. Oh.
Yeah.
You completely...
I knew it. But so if his chair is moving, then the tablet is charging just the way a yeah. car charges yeah. when it moves. You know yeah. what I mean? Yeah. Bullshit. But I only respected him more. I loved being blown off by Stephen Hawking. That was cool. How many people can say they tried to fuck Stephen Hawking and... God.
I was once in the same room as him, but I didn't try and get off. And I was too shy to talk to him. It's too late now.
Maybe you don't have the audacity to admit that you did try to have sex with him. You just say, oh, we were in the same room. I wasn't trying to go on a date with him. Maybe you were.
Yeah.
I just have the strength to admit it. I don't mind. He wasn't interested. That's okay. He lied about his tablet battery. I'm okay with it.
So the idea would run out halfway through a party as well. Ah. Oh. You'd definitely just have a portable battery in there to stick.
But what a wonderful man.
It's a really good way of getting rid of people.
I know. This is why he's a genius.
Yeah. It'd be good to have that ability. Also in that chapter when you talk, I think we talked about the Hugh Hefner mansion before and you haven't been. But the bit that I was interested in was the German man.
Oh, yeah.
Who, as you were, he saw you in the party and he asked... if he could fuck you in the ass for sport.
Yeah, I don't...
And that was the thing that I didn't... You know, obviously, you could say, can I fuck you in the ass for sexual gratification? Yeah. For one or both of us. What do you think he meant by for sport?
I don't know
if it was... Can I fuck you in the ass for sport?
I know, those were his words.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was a language barrier.
Yeah.
Or I don't know a lot about sports, so I didn't know...
I mean, I think like some sports can get that way. Usually after it's usually in the bath afterwards.
Yeah. Maybe it was his way of saying, you know, no strings attached. It's okay. A game to me to like hunt and have my way with different women at parties. Would you like to do that? I don't know. I just remember he just said it. He just came out and said it.
If you do that, don't go straight for the act. Don't go say, can I kiss you and then fuck you in the ass?
Yeah.
For sports. Little kiss.
Yeah, but I mean, I went through all these, I'm obviously a feminist, I know that you are as well, but on my journey as a young woman growing up at a very specific time in culture, when virginity was fetishized and Britney Spears was, you know, the sexy by accident, we didn't understand about all the mechanisms controlling her life. I really thought that the best thing that you could be was soft and pretty and sweet. And I wanted to do things like go to the Playboy Mansion. And I wanted to be the type of woman that was likable. And I wanted to go on these adventures. And there's darkness and there's light in them. You know, that German man said that to me, but I was still, no thanks. All right. Like, I just kept it moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was quite resilient. And also just... ignorant to some of the darkness around me, I think. I was just...
Well, and I like the fact... you're very open about everything, which I like, but I also like the fact that you kind of admit you're very vanilla in your sexual taste.
So vanilla!
Yeah, which is quite a rare thing for people. I think I am very vanilla in my sexual taste as well. And it's quite a rare thing to have people talk about, because it's also... especially, again, for women, because I think it's like, if you're talking about sex, it's going to be, like, oh, look, yeah. You know, so it's a very positive thing. And I think it's very positive that you, again, talk about your mistakes. In the book, you talk about your mistakes that you've made, or things that are judged as mistakes in comedy that aren't necessarily mistakes, but you will talk about the you know, all those things that have happened. I think, and it is sort of weird, and you do talk about this as well, that people are being judged by things that they said on a Twitter feed 15 years ago. And then that attitude of people wanting to just destroy you over that as well. It's not even like, are you going to apologize for it, or will you apologize for it? What do you think? It's like, you've said that, and that's this lack of forgiveness is sort of weird, I think, isn't it?
It's ruthless. And it's so fascinating having a 12-year-old. You've been famous a long time. How come you haven't been canceled?
Yeah.
You must have said some spicy things. 10 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
It's impossible not to have, because we lived in a different ecosystem of what was acceptable and what we thought was funny and we didn't know. And I love this bit that Neil Brennan has, you know, the American comedian,
yes.
Neil Brennan. And I won't do the bit at you, but the like idea of it is, someone comes up to LeBron James with a photograph of him when he was 7 years old, and they're livid, and they go, is this you? And he's like, what? Yeah. And he goes, is this you? Why don't you look like this? And LeBron's like, I've grown. And he's like angry that he doesn't look like this picture of himself when he was seven. And I think cancel culture, whatever you want to call it, and this does not include, you know, Harvey Weinstein being dragged out of the industry and accountability, of course. But I'm talking about, why did you say this word in 2003? And why did you not know? Why were you not clairvoyant in your comedy? Everything we do now is not going to be acceptable in 10 years. But I feel like when I was taught how to be kind, it was, don't say this because it might hurt someone. And I go, oh, okay, well, I don't want to hurt someone.
Yeah.
And now I feel like the whatever you want to call them, this brigade of exposing people, they want to hurt someone. They don't just want growth and evolution and accountability. They really want to hurt someone sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's the opposite of what it started out as. You know, when people go, you're like a woke lefty, I go, yeah. And I think I'm not. I think that has outgrown me. That's a whole other beast of itself.
Yeah.
This cancer.
But I guess, and I suppose, what's it? I think our mistakes define us, and our mistakes are the way we learn as we go along. And so, like, you can't get to 35, 36, 37, 54 without having made loads of mistakes and errors. And that's why I just, that idea that, oh, you did something wrong. You have to, you know, what? And you never, you're going to say you've never done anything wrong and you never will do anything wrong. You'll never make a mistake. You'll never say the wrong thing, especially if tastes change and so it's.
With kids, like living with a 12-year-old, everything they do is documented. And so they do live in fear of being exposed themselves. Yeah. And I think that's why they go looking outward and they try to expose first. A lot of them. I mean, I might not have it sussed 100%, but that's how it seems to me. It's
well,
really
that's
weird.
Good. Like, yeah, they're aware of it, I suppose, which we, even like when Twitter started, we weren't really thinking, oh, in 15 years' time, someone might find this tweet. You'll think, we'll tweet this and this will disappear into the ether. No one's going to be searching for it. And 15 years' time to judge it by a standard that we're no longer judged by. It's very interesting. Let me ask you a couple of them. I'll ask you a couple of my questions from my new book.
Okay.
And then we'll go back. There's many interesting things to talk to you about. Right, let's see. I won't do that. There's some nonsense in here.
I like the nonsense.
Okay.
It's fun.
All right, we'll do this one. Would you rather have all your teeth fall out and be replaced with the teeth of a Neanderthal man or woman?
No.
Or have all your hair fall out and be replaced with the wire from a Brillo pad?
I don't wear my real hair professionally anyway. Right. I wear wigs. Yeah. I wear wiglets. I wear extensions. Not today. I've come au naturel for you. But definitely hair. I love my teeth.
Right.
I value teeth. I'm not from here. I would do anything. Having my teeth fall out is my greatest nightmare.
Right. But be replaced with Neanderthal teeth?
No.
Okay. It's probably the right choice. Though hairs, and it's all your hair, bodily hair as well.
I don't have any other hair but this hair.
All right. I know you do talk. I've heard you talk a lot about yourself through the book and your podcast. So I know that you're lasered. You've lasered all your hair off.
Yeah. Well, you know.
I mean, it saves time, doesn't it?
We could go into that if you want. No, Richard, I'm not very hairy anyway.
Okay.
Because, like, see this. This is like a toddler's ponytail. I don't have any hair.
Nice.
And you know those people that you see with loads of beautiful, silky, curly, glossy hair? I'm so jealous of them. I think it's so stunning. But then I know they have to shave their legs a lot and wherever else. So I never shave my legs. I don't really have a lot of hair. Yes, I have been lasered, but okay. It's not like I'm a Kardashian. Like, it's not coming back.
Okay. Would you rather be King Stephen or Stephen King?
Wow.
Do you need any help on knowing what King Stephen did? It's Stephen of Blois. Pardon?
Yes, please.
Yes, you do. He was Stephen of Blois. He survived the white ship disaster that killed most of the nobility in the 1200s or 1300s. I can't remember the exact date. I just read a book about it. He went on to be quite an unpleasant, not very well-regarded king. But he was the King of England. And he was the only King Stephen. Or Stephen King. He got hit by a truck, didn't he?
What? Stephen King got hit by a
truck? He got run over, didn't he? He got hit by a truck.
But he's fine.
Van or something. I think it did him quite some damage. I mean, that's not all he's done. I was just trying to make him look like a less...
Not to get too political, I would never want to be king of anything. Okay. I think if you want leadership, then that in any party, this is not party specific, I think it means you're probably a very dangerous, weird person. And I would rather be Stephen King because he's an excellent writer. Imagine my book, but with a Stephen King twist.
There's lots of twists in it. I think it's, you know, I highly recommend the book. It's very enjoyable and very, you know, I think I'd love the honesty, I think, but I think that's, it is, comedians are very honest.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, that can be their downfall as well, I guess, that they are, but in a sense, if you're that honest, I don't think there's much that anyone can do to you, because I think you, there's not much that you're leaving out.
I don't think so. No, I've done some...
Only legally.
Well,
to protect the
I've gotten
others.
Really good since my first appearance on this podcast. I think I slagged off an actual child and might have used her name.
Okay.
But that's because at that time, no one was really listening to me. And I thought what was funny was that a then very young, kind-looking mother would slag off a child. That, to me, was the joke. I thought, you never slag off a child. I'll slag off this child. And by the way, she kind of deserved it. But I like that child. I have a lot of respect for her. But then her parents listened to her podcast and confronted me in the school gates and were like, oh, you've immortalized that story about our child. I was like, whoops. And that was the first time I realized, oh... Because again, I don't actually want to hurt people.
No,
I went, oh, I don't want to hurt people. I shouldn't have done that. So then you had me back on the podcast. Thank you very much. And I have since learned how to tell my authentic truth and protect other people.
Yeah.
So the lawyers really like me. I'm good at just hiding enough that I don't, it's because it's not about exposing anybody else.
No.
So yeah, I'm really honest. And I love that about comedians. I think intimacy is my language of love. When I meet someone, you know, backstage, we got straight onto the balls.
We did.
And I love that. I don't want to talk about it. It rained today.
But then, again, you mentioned this in the book. I think with comedians, there is a shorthand with comedians. And there is this, sometimes you don't see someone for 10 years and you just slip back into immediately talking about something consequential, at least, or interesting. There isn't small talk with comedians.
No.
And we do seem to understand each other in that way, like the way that dogs recognize each other.
Yeah.
Despite looking different, they all know they're dogs. Not saying all comedians are dogs. But...
Just the ones in my book.
Yeah. So what was I going to ask you about next? That is my good question. Oh, look. So look, you said in the book, right, very early on, that you don't think you're a good actor.
No.
But you are a good actor. You've acted in things. You're very good in The Duchess. I know you're sort of like... a little bit of a version of Captain Ryan, but not exactly, though.
I think playing a version of yourself is different from being an actor.
Okay.
And I think if you're a proper dramatic actor, I'm really frightened of those people. I feel like they're just trained liars. They might as well be spies. I feel like they should be punished. And did you read the bit about the dramatic actor who wanted to play the game? Oh, God,
yes.
This actor was like, hey, shall we play a game? And he's a really big actor in Hollywood. And we had some mutual friends. And I basically was like, no, I don't want to play whatever fucking game. And then he's like, the game is you just say the first thing that you think. You just, something pops into your head and you say it. And then the next person goes and they just say whatever comes into their heads. And then the third person, this is an amazing game that I play with my actor friends. And I was like, ah, I thought it was so scary. He thinks acting like being a person is a game. I saw, who was it? The Twilight girl. Is she called Kristen?
Kristen Stewart.
Yes. See? Lockdown. I don't know anything anymore. I think I have long COVID and a newborn. But she said, you're getting time off soon. That's nice. And she said, no, if no one gives me a script, I don't know who to be. And I thought that was so sad and creepy.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think there is that with the really good actors, there is almost a sort of absence of them,
right?
And I think I think that's the difference between, and I think comedians can be actors and actors can be comedians, and it's not true of all actors. But I think you have to be a professional actor and to do that job all the time. I think you have to be you have to be able to sit around doing nothing for a lot of time for a start,
yeah,
and be happy with that. So there's got to be, there's just, maybe it's just everything beneath behind the face is missing. Maybe that's what I'm saying.
That's nice.
Yeah.
They'll like that. I was going to say, it's like a compliment. It means they're good at their craft. But then the way you said it, not a compliment.
there's a couple of bits that in the book that really, that I thought was interesting. I thought you're talking about, you watch a video of yourself as a kid, or you'll be just being funny as a kid, and you talk about, as an adult, trying to recapture, being an adult comedian is almost trying to recapture what was funny about you as that unfettered funniness of being a child when you're not worried about anything.
Yeah, I was such a good comedian when I was 10.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize I was being political. I was really baffling everyone in the room. We were little French children. My parents sent me to a French school, kind of like a prank. And we had to do these poems, and all the children... I wanted to be like them. I wanted not to be problematic. I wanted to be sweet and do a good poem. But anytime I got a chance to speak in front of people, I was like, this is the message they need to hear. So I did De Baiser. I was French-Canadian, so it's going to sound a lot like Celine Dion. But I was like, des baisers, encore des baisers, un gros baiser mouillé de la voisine d'à côté, un baiser plein de rouge à lèvres de la gardienne Marie-Ève, un béco sur le front. And I was telling, like, all these people who I was made to kiss, and I was ranting about, like, why do you have to kiss the babysitter, and why do you have to kiss your uncle, and why? And then I'm, like, telling parents, don't force your kids to kiss strangers. And at the end, I was like, seulement quand j'ai envie. Compris, and that means only when I want to. Understand? And I already had my little, like, sass, because I was angry, serious. And then at the end, I go, seulement quand j'ai envie. Compris? Merci. I did this little, like, oh, but I'm just so cute. I'm 10. And I've always done that. And I lost my way for a while, but I was just really good when I was 10. Yeah. I would love to get that chops.
Maybe that's what we're all trying to do to an extent. And maybe that's when you become, not entirely, because some comedians are horrible filth buckets and you wouldn't be exactly that as a kid. But doing my puppet show, I mentioned to you backstage, where I do this thing with ventriloquist dummies. And it's improvised, and it works when I completely switch myself off, basically, so that I don't know what's coming. And, you know, you enter that, where the subconscious thing is, where it's taken over. And so you are having a conversation with another entity without... And it reminds me of what I was like as a kid, you know. It's a similar sort of thing. And there is this, again, pressure, I suppose, through your teen years and through your 20s to conform, and you're pushed one way and pushed another. And it's sort of, I just found it interesting, the idea of comedy being an attempt to recapture something about that pure essence of comedy in a child.
There's a real honesty in a child, especially a child like that, like you or like me. We had something to say. We needed to say it.
But you were an extremely bright child, though. Your mum's section of the book, she talks about you being able to count to 20 when you were like a year old, which is pretty impressive.
But she was annoyed that I wasn't assigning numbers to the things.
Yeah, so because she didn't know that kids, the 1.5-year-old kids, were meant to do that. So you were talking in sentences very quickly, and you were counting and. So you're very brainy, like that's child genius levels, I would say.
I think I just got a lot of attention when I was really small, a lot of one-on-one attention. And then that all went away. So my mom can say that now and be very smug about what a smart baby I was. But then I became a really dumb young woman for a while. I did, so it's fine.
Well, I think you maybe pretended to be a dumb woman. I don't think you ever... You sort of hide your light under a bushel. You're saying backstage, I think, something about it. I think you compared the book to sort of something written by a reality TV person.
Well, that in a good way.
But no, they wouldn't use the word ameliorate, would they, in their book? So that you just casually toss in there.
But I like a mix of high and low media. I'm not snobby about stuff like that. I like a reality star book in the same way that I like your smart stuff. I like it all.
Yeah. I don't know, it just feels like you're... I think that's all fine, and you don't have to show how clever you are, but you are very, very clever.
I don't think I am anymore. No. In terms of the velocity of, like, I was way ahead of babies when I was a baby, and then I went to the Playboy Mansion, and I did stupid things, and I got dumber. And now I've leveled off.
But also, there was a smartness behind that, and an understanding behind that. And you were always into that. You know, what I like about you is you've stayed as a stand-up comedian. You're still touring, and you're just embarking on a new tour. So you haven't left that behind. But you've embraced what TV is now, which and fit into what TV is now. So you've done sitcoms, which is great, but you're also doing your more reality TV stuff yourself. But you were always into that as well.
Yeah, comes from really authentic place.
So you loved the Kardashians before anyone in the UK knew the Kardashians were.
Thank you. And I tried to make my first Edinburgh show Kardashians the Musical. Well, my first show, you didn't see my musical show, did you, in Edinburgh? No. I knew Katie already, but I don't know if you did. My first Edinburgh show was a musical because I always liked musicals, and I also thought no one would want to listen to me speak for an hour. But I ended up doing a musical about being in pageants when I was young. But what I really wanted to do was Kardashians the Musical. And I remember my tour promoter was like, nobody knows who they are, Catherine. And I was like, oh, so frustrated that no one here knew who the Kardashians were, because I really wanted to talk about them and connect. And now everybody knows.
Yeah.
So like, yes, I'm a bit of a connoisseur of shit TV. Thank you.
And you were you were in Canada, you were trying to get on you did a dating show in Canada. Which you've now sort of come full circle, because your latest... It's called Ready to Mingle. Is it the name?
Called Ready to Mingle.
Ready to Mingle, yes. So what's Ready to Mingle is the latest. Is this Netflix as well?
No, this is on ITV Hub right now. You can watch it all. Okay. There is a very confident hero single girl, Sophia, and there are 12 hot boys in the house, and she has to decipher which are single and which are coupled up with a partner. And they're all vying for her love. And if she chooses a single one, they split 50K. If she chooses a one in a relationship, he and his partner get 50K.
Right.
So it's fun. And it's about trusting your intuition, finding, you know, who's genuine in life, spotting authenticity. I like it.
Yeah. Well, it's a very Catherine Ryan show, because it's... You know, it's got that level. It's like Your Face or Mine was that similar sort of thing, wasn't it? Where it's the game more than anything else. It's the game of, you know, am I going to admit my partner is less attractive than my ex-partner in order to win money? Or am I going to lie and not win the money?
Yeah. But I guess I'm always pushing people to tell the truth.
Yeah. But it also fits in with you, you know, sort of having been in relationships where you've failed to spot the idiot.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think because because you're so invested in it, and there is, you know, this kind of TV, and when the reason it's taken off is because people love it, and there's a cleverness to it that's beyond, you know, if people dismiss it, they're not seeing the intrigue and cleverness behind it. It was when Big Brother first started.
Yeah.
You kind of went, this is a phenomenal show because of the levels that are going on in it, which I think the good reality TV stuff still does, but it's hard because there's so much of it, right?
There's a lot now, yeah. Do you watch any? Do you watch Love Island?
I've sort of given up. I did in the early 2000s, I kind of watched a few things, but yeah, I don't, it does feel like a waste of time after a while.
It's fine to unplug from it. And a lot of the contributors are very clued up now, so it doesn't have its pure innocence that it once had.
Yeah.
But that's why I liked Ready to Mingle, because I felt like it was more honest than a lot of the others.
Okay. And what's your new tour? Is it called Mrs.?
Yes.
Is it about being married? Is that the hook, or is it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I am someone's wife now. But also, Mrs., I had this idea for the set and the stage and everything. We'd have these big letters, and at the end they would split apart a little bit, and it would be like Miss Us. And I kind of am mourning the relationship that just my daughter and I had when it was us, but we didn't have the budget for that, really. So, it's both. It's like Mrs. and it's Miss Us, and it's Miss. It's just about what's been going on the last 2 years. And I'm finding it very difficult to write a stand-up now, because a lot of people are sad. And a lot of it's like too soon, isn't it? What are you going to go out? So everyone's Nana's dead? It's really bad. There's a lot of uncertainty.
That seemed like a good response to that material. I don't want to nudge you towards that, but that seemed like that might be the way to go. That's the way people are going to cope with it.
This crowd hates their nanas.
But that's what comedy, and you talk about that as well. That's what comedy's for, is when you've been, and you talk about various, you talk about your miscarriage and how a friend making a joke about it was one of the healing things about it. Because, you know, the right context and the right person, the right time, you can joke about everything. I think, you know.
I think so.
And you sort of have to joke about everything a little bit as well. Because there's a healing aspect to it as long as it's coming from the right place.
Yeah.
So that's why taking a line out of context or not understanding, you know, that's the danger of saying things in the wrong place. But in a comedy, you know, club or in a theatre where people are coming to see you, they'll know what they're going to get. And they'll know who you are. And I think you'll have a fantastic time. I mean, there's enough stories in the book. You've fought off burglars and...
Yeah, my husband threw a burglar out the window.
Yeah.
Yeah, he came in our house while we were home and burgled us. It sucked. And he was wearing a mask, a skeleton mask, pre-pandemic.
Right.
He was very forward-thinking. And now you see masks all the time and they're not scary, but it was really scary in our house.
Yeah, but how do burglars cope with that now that everyone's got it? It's,
I know.
How can you tell I'm a mugger and a burglar?
It's their thing.
It seems to have happened to you a lot. You seem to be kind of the victim of crime quite a lot.
I mean, survivor of crime.
Yeah.
Well, I've been mugged a lot. But again, I've been stupid a lot. Just have my guard down, walking around the planet like doo-dee-doo, going to the Playboy Mansion and doing things. Anytime I was mugged or burgled, I just didn't have my wits about me, but I have wits now. And I think I've been mugged a regular London amount.
Okay.
How many muggings? 3 in the book? And then one guy tried to get in my house, but I think he was lost. I lived in a church.
One guy got in your house and one guy tried to get in your house.
Yeah.
I mean, I had my phone stolen out of my hand. That's the only time.
By some youth or grown-ups?
Yeah, by a guy on a bike. But again, you know, as comedians, I had a Hitler moustache. It was at the time because I was doing my show, Hitler Moustache. So I know that I had to be driven around in a police car looking for a black man who'd stolen my phone.
No.
They didn't say anything about the moustache, the police, but they treated me with a level of respect that I've never had before.
Oh.
So, yeah, as a comedian, all these... But we were saying this backstage. As a comedian, anything that happens to you is fair game. And even, you know, there's something there, even if it is just... I mean, I think with your podcast, which I think has, you know, it's touched a lot of people and people have really got into it because you've just been very open. You talk about, as you do in the book, you talk about your miscarriage and just very openly.
Miscarriage, plural.
Miscarriages, yeah. So... you know, but that's the power of thinking of being a comedian. You can treat things seriously as well, and take a serious subject, and people will listen because they're used to listening. You talk about other stuff, but
books and podcasts are good for that. Yeah. I think. Yeah, I didn't have the trust in people to talk about more serious, earnest things, and this lockdown has definitely done that. I think everyone thought I was sort of this little mini Joan Rivers, and I was really mean, and that I let them think that. I don't really care. Yeah. I really don't. And then now with the podcast and that type of connection with people with the book, the chapter about my husband is like a rom-com. And like, oh, Catherine, you're so soft. And I'm like, oh, well, I'm the same. I just, at the Apollo, it's no place for being like, oh, and I really believe this. You just have to be bam, bam, bam.
Sure.
So I don't know.
Well, yeah, I didn't know this. It's a very impressive career and it's a very impressive journey. And it's not like you... like set out and thought this, you know, I think things happened and you worked out where to go and what and where you were going to go. And it wasn't like a plan, but you know, you have created this, you're a businesswoman as well as a comedian, you know, and you understand your business and you understand what you have to be in order to make that go. But yeah, there's people are ready to see the real Catherine Ryan as well as the
real Catherine Ryan's in a surgeon's bin, Richard. That's the other thing. I haven't had any plastic surgery on my face at all, but I keep making jokes about it. Like, I can't be buried at sea, Richard. I just turn really camp. I turn into my mom sometimes.
But that's, you know, that's the natural comedian in you. And it's about, and comedy is about making people laugh and it is about doing jokes. And you know, people trusting you if you're doing a joke about something that's inappropriate. And if you like, that's what Barry Cryer always said, not on this podcast when he was on the other week, but if you like the person who's telling the joke, it's okay.
Yeah.
And if you don't like them, it's, you can, a good person you like can sort of say, and just as you really are with friends, you know, you can.
Yeah, there's say, context though, yeah. nuance, and I feel sad for my daughter's generation that they don't. There's not seems to be as much of that going forward. But I love playing with that space and trusting people in context, and we'll see. This is the Catherine Ryan's cancel tour.
I'd be amazed.
I got some spicy opinions about the vaccine, Richard. All right.
Yeah, if you go that way, we might get cancelled. but also in the book, there's another bit early on where you talk about not caring about what other people think, which you just touched on there. But I think that is your power. It's that understanding. I think as a younger person, I kind of, if someone didn't like what I was doing, I'd be going, why, you know, why don't you like me? And I think it's the realization again with age that I think you always realize this, that nobody is liked by, you know, you say in the book, you don't like everyone, you know, so why are you worried about everyone liking you?
Yeah.
But if you can overcome that and genuinely not be bothered about people not liking you.
I have long had a very peaceful understanding that we all like different things, and that's okay. And I feel like when someone dislikes me, they're entitled to dislike me. I don't feel any sense of effrontery from that. And I think we can all use that, whatever industry you're in. Like people, I think I say people are going to talk shit about you in the office, at school, in Variety magazine. They just will. And Samantha Jones, in a Series 5 episode of Sex and the City, says, if I cared what every bitch in New York said about me, I'd never leave the house. And it's like, there are people who aren't going to like you. I didn't realize that people didn't know and accept that. Yeah. And it's not an age thing always. Because no. I think, again, even my mother struggles with, you know, that. And yeah. I try to teach, you know, this book is as much for anyone, but for my mother, as the young women who listen to me, I just want everyone to live with kind, thoughtful, generous, reckless abandon. Because, you know, it's not about being loud or mean. It's just... like, we're going to die. So you might as well do everything that you want. And who cares if someone likes it?
But I also think that a lot of the power of the people, of the trolls or whatever, the people saying the mean stuff, is that they assume, you know, that when I get a tweet from someone going, I don't think you're funny, you go, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Their power is like, oh, but I don't like you. I don't like this stuff. That's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, as long as someone else does, as long as... you're not, it's not everyone who doesn't like me. Just don't look, don't see, don't bother watching my stuff. It's pretty easy to avoid.
And the people who dislike you, some of them are having fun regardless. Yeah. Some people really love to take offense.
Yeah, of course.
And they really like to get angry. They've got a special person at Ofcom that they speak to. They're like, Linda, it's me again. And like, let them have that whatever version of joy in their lives.
Well, it's lovely to see you again, Catherine, and I have to recommend everything that you're doing. Telling everybody everything, which is, you know, you are sort of an agony aunt in this, you know, you're actually literally getting emails from people and just very honestly giving them your opinion on them. But it is lovely, you know, and the one I was listening to on the drive here, there's like a couple of 13-year-old and teenagers had got in touch about various things, and just to have you respond to that and say something sensible about it, which always will be, is so lovely. And so that's a lovely podcast which you should all listen to, and those Gusto ads really work, because I couldn't work out why my wife had suddenly started getting into Gusto, and then I said, because she's been listening.
Gusto's delicious, though, isn't it? Do you love it?
Well,
you can say
what if they sponsor my podcast down there? I think the food is really good. It's nice, but it's there's too much packaging. That's what I think.
Do you think?
Yeah.
That's helpful. I'll feed that back.
Okay.
Because, you know, I think I'm not supposed to talk badly about any other recipe box companies officially, but I've tried a few. I think they're trash. And people will say to me, oh, I've tried Recipe Box. It's like, no, it's not any other. Gusto's actually delicious.
It's and what I liked about it. Oh, God, I accidentally turned into an advert for Gusto that I'm not getting paid for.
You might,
yours,
Richard,
are definitely,
you might.
Well, I like, but it's nice to see, you know, you work out how, it's a very easy way to learn how to cook stuff. I thought, you know, I made some, prawns with like breadcrumbs on them, and I never knew how to do that. It's really easy. So it teaches. But I always find cooking quite like magic. And when I've been cooking cakes with the kids and stuff, I still can't quite get over the fact that lump of fucking rubbish turns into a cake. And I, every time we do it, I go, this is brilliant. And it's always okay. So don't, well, if it's, Ian Gusto. I won't say anything bad about it. I'll take that bit out about the packaging.
No,
it's mostly recyclable, but there's bits of it. There's like an egg comes in a fucking cardboard box.
All right, Taskmaster, yeah. Champion of Champions. How would you like to send an egg to someone?
Buy your own egg. Get a box of eggs before you do it. It's true. That is recyclable, that bit, so it's okay. Ready to Mingle. Watch The Duchess. It's fantastic. There's no more of that coming out, though.
No.
That's a shame.
That's okay. Jimmy Carr once said to me, not wanting something is the same as getting it.
But it's, you know, but it's, I think it's terrific that you're doing all these things in absolutely different aspects of show business and making them all work. So do a stand-up tour and a stand-up show on Netflix and a sitcom on Netflix and all these other shows you're doing and the podcast. You're absolutely doing everything in every, and you're working very hard. You seem to be, you were editing your book 3 hours before you had your second child. Yeah. And you were back to work very, very quickly.
10 days.
That's insane. Don't work too hard.
I'm starting to lose it, actually. It's too much.
Yeah.
I was running on adrenaline. When Fred was born, I started working when he was 10 days old, and that was cool. And now he's 16 weeks old, so like 3.5 months, whatever. And I'm a bit like, oh, I really timed this newborn badly. it's tough. Even when you're me, it's tough. And when I say me, I mean I have many privileges and I have a stay-at-home dad and I have all these things, but it's like, oh my God, it is really tough. You can't have it all, basically.
No. I mean, you're doing an insane amount of stuff and some of the human beings that you're creating with your body.
Well, annoyingly, I want to raise him myself.
Yeah.
And I had a nanny one day and she was like, can't believe you've done this all by yourself. You know, they're like trained to get booked again by lavishing praise upon you. She's like, oh my God, 10 weeks and you've done it all yourself. I was like, yeah, I'm 38. I mean, I can do it, but I can't do it. It's hard. And I don't know how I did it when I was 25 and alone, but I guess I had more energy and less work. And I have long COVID, Richard.
I know.
How do you know?
You've all got it now as well, because you've sat.
No, you can't catch long COVID off someone. Do you guys have long COVID? Anyone? No.
I mean, how do you tell the difference between long COVID and having a 16-week-old baby, though? That's the big question.
This sounds like a setup for my new tour. How do you tell the difference between... Thank you, Richard.
You can have it.
Oh, thanks.
You might have to write a punchline for it, though. That's the problem with that. So anyway, all this fantastic stuff. The book is very much worth your time. The audiobook, as always, I recommend audiobooks because they're very lovely way to ingest it, but you get that extra bit from your mum. Which is worth the license fee alone. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a big round of applause to the amazing Catherine Ryan.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. We'll be back next week. Hang around. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Catherine Ryan. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, and everyone from the Go Faster Strike team and everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre. Thank you very much for having us. Research is by Kathleen McKeegan. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production. Please sponsor me for my run that I'll have probably done by now at the time you hear this. Maybe not. JustGiving.com/Monoball and become a monthly badger at GoFasterStripe.com/badges. You know you've been meaning to do it. Now do it.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Thanks for listening. RichardHerring.com/gigs. GoFasterStripe.com for all my books, downloads, all that sort of shizzle. Oh, yeah, I know all the cool words. And would love to see you on the Can I Have My Ball Back tour if you can make it. Bye.